off top. You know, ladybugs can fly 37 miles per hour. Tyreek Hill only runs 22. Play the music.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.
Welcome to the Dominique Foxworth Show. I'm Dominique Foxworth. That is my wonderful football genius friend, Bill Barnwell. He's joining us along with my fateful milkshake buddy, Charlie Kravitz. We had milkshakes. So oh, we got man. Big milkshake energy. I went to the Ravens game. I got hilarious Ravens game stories. We got a lot of fun laughing at Brian, our producer, who's a Lions fan. And well, we actually felt sorry for him. We didn't laugh at him.
Really starting to feel bad for Brian.
Where you want to start, though, Charlie?
Well, I would like to say I jacked up, and I also have a tummy ache. It's a lot of dairy, a lot of late night dairy.
So soft.
Let's start with Ravens and Chiefs.
Okay.
What a game! What a game, guys. The Ravens they lost.
They did.
Patrick Mahomes going to another Super Bowl. It was one of those games where at the beginning it felt like the Chiefs were in control, and it felt like they were in control for a lot of the game, yeah. despite the fact it was a 7-point game and the Ravens kept having the ball down the stretch. But the question that I came to after that game is, to you guys, do you feel like the Ravens lost that game because of their offense or because they had to play Patrick Mahomes?
I think they lost it because of their offense. I think the playing Patrick Mahomes part is fair. He's really good. He was awesome in the like beginning of the game was mm-hmm. like the scariest portion of the game for the Ravens Stadium where they were up and jacked up. It was intense. And Patrick Mahomes got that thing after Lamar punted away. He got it and he did some freaky stuff all the way down the field. And it felt like there's nothing that this incredible Ravens defense can do about it. He took them on two back-to-back drives and the fans were like cheering, but you know, we've all been to sporting events where it's like you're cheering but you kind of know. The defense brought him back into the game and it felt like there was a chance for some big plays, but we all there kind of knew that it was one of those Patrick games throughout the course of it. What's up, Bill?
Did we know that? Because they scored after those two drives, they scored a total of 3 points the rest of the game. Like, the Ravens defense adjusted. They shut Patrick Mahomes and this Chiefs offense down for the majority of the game. So yes, they gave up 14 points, but this was not a game where the Chiefs proved that they were going to be dominant and then dominated. They proved they were going to be dominant and then they were kind of mediocre for the final three quarters of the game.
I can't disagree with that. However, and this is more like a gut feel and watching the game, that it very much felt like the Chiefs were playing a different type of game plan. And it was, we are not going to give this defense an opportunity to cost us until the Ravens offense makes us. So it felt like they were in the first half, let's get this lead. And then from that point forth, they were not trying to do long developing drop back plays. Of course, they're trying to score, but I think more what they were doing was risk mitigation.
Yeah.
And I felt like when they needed to drive or they felt like they needed to drive, they broke out the more aggressive things later in the game. So it sounds like I'm taking away from the Ravens defense. Their defense was incredible throughout the course of this entire game. But I did at times feel like a lot like I felt in last week's Chiefs game where it's a team. It felt like a big brother situation, not a big brother will beat you up, but big brother, I've been here before. I'm comfortable in this. This heat is not something that makes me nervous and we'll take the steps that we need to take. We're not going to pull out anything too extreme unless we need it.
You know that we could be going the opposite direction and be doing the Lamar can't do it conversation. And you know we're going so far in the opposite direction here on the Dominique Foxworth Show that 2 minutes in, Dominique's talking about a risk mitigation offense. That's where we are at in terms of how down bad we are about the Ravens. On the other side of this camera, we have a longtime Ravens aficionado and a guy who said the Ravens were the best team in football and his pick to win the Super Bowl as recently as what, last week?
I mean, I said it before the season started. So
I'm saying Charlie.
Oh, yeah, Charlie, yeah.
Yeah.
I picked the Ravens versus the Eagles. I thought the Ravens would win the Super Bowl. So, like, I've been a Ravens aficionado for this entire season. And maybe that's coloring the way that I'm viewing this game. But actually, I would go the other way if I thought I was, like, the Ravens defense was great. But I still, and yeah, you could be right. There's part of this is probably a bit of like Patrick Mahomes confirmation bias, where I'm prone to think of the team that we've seen do it time and time again has some extra ability or is more comfortable in that moment and is more strategic in those things. But that's not unreasonable to think that they understood that until the Ravens offense proved that they can move the ball consistently, that there is nothing that could put the Ravens back in the game short of a sack, fumble, or an interception. So it would be wise for them to have a risk mitigation strategy, whether they did or didn't in the course of that game.
But the Ravens did move the ball. It's just when they moved the ball, a bad thing happened. And it was a different bad thing each time. We're going to talk about some of those bad things, I am sure. But it was such a weird game because it simultaneously felt like the Chiefs were dominating and yet not really doing anything.
Yeah.
For most of the contest. And that's a very different kind of Chiefs from the Chiefs I think we've seen win playoff games in years past.
Bill, what did you think about the way that the game unfolded for the Ravens, though, where they only had three early down runs to running backs the entire game? And it felt like the second Mahomes got it going early, it threw off Todd Monken and the Ravens' entire game script, and Lamar was more erratic, and it was, I don't know, a B-minus Lamar game after it looked like it could have been an F Lamar game early in the game. Mm-hmm. And are you sort of surprised by how that unfolded for them, that they couldn't get the offense on track at all? Because they weren't down huge. They could have played their offense throughout the game and continued to move the ball. Yeah.
They were down 10 points for most of the fourth quarter. And so Gus Edwards got a 15-yard carry on first and 10 in the first half. It was his only carry of the first half. They gave him the ball on first and 10 to start the second half. And then the Ravens never called a run play on first and 10 for the remainder of the game. And again, if you're down 20, you're down 24, okay, you have to throw. You have no choice. But this is the Ravens. Like, even though they are more pass happy than people think, even though they're not the Ravens of, 5 years ago, that's not the Greg Roman offense, like, they still run the ball. They're still good at running the ball. And they're playing a team in the Chiefs that do not have a good run defense. And I was shocked that even if not just for, just changing things up, trying a different solution, that they did not get to running the ball. And I think that's what surprised me the most about this was, last week we were sitting here talking about how smart, listen, I was here sitting here talking about how smart the Ravens were for adapting and adjusting during the game, right? Like, first half, they were struggling. We were texting about it. It was Raven Schadenfreude on the text chain. And then second half, Lamar gets going. They get the RPOs going. The running game gets going in the fourth quarter. Like, they changed what they were doing and it worked. Here, it didn't really feel like they had that changeup or that plan B. It didn't feel like they had a solution to kind of match what the Chiefs were doing in terms of taking away the intermediate routes. They never got back to running the ball, and they felt shook. I mean, like, this is not my place of emphasis, but I don't know, Dominique, it felt like they were not playing scared, but they were sloppy.
Shook is probably a good word for it, because I think their answers to the blitz, Spagnuolo was taking those away. And I noticed that what the Chiefs did a lot when they anticipate blitz this season, they'll go to the 4x1, especially if they anticipate a zone blitz. And it seemed like the 4x1 is meant to answer when people kind of roll their coverage to take away the hot side of the blitz. And they were doing that to the Ravens, but the Ravens didn't have that fourth player over there, or they didn't have the answer. And then you go backside when they roll away from it. And the backside was always a single receiver on a slow developing route. And then Lamar's in trouble. And so it wasn't all on Todd Monken in that offense, but it also wasn't all on Lamar. And I noticed there's sometimes where the tackle missed a block and you get pressure. The running back gets tossed to the side and the safety's in Lamar's lap. Then there's other times when Lamar looks to where the hot read is and they've anticipated it and they've rolled the coverage to there. And then Lamar's looking back to the other side and trying to make something happen. And then there are other times when Lamar makes a bad decision. So it was a whole offensive collapse. But I might be taking us back several minutes in the podcast, but you said that they moved the ball and they didn't. Like, they really didn't move the ball through the course of this game. I'm looking at the game log. They had the 75-yard drive for the touchdown. Well, first they had three plays. Punt, 75 yards, touchdown. Then 8 yards, punt, 19 yards, punt, 6 yards, punt, -1 yard, end of half. Oh, that was a kneel. 4 yards, punt. They weren't moving the ball. Like, they were not moving the ball offensively.
But what happened after that? They got a big pass to Zay Flowers and got in the red zone. Zay Flowers was immediately flagged for taunting. Good call. And then they
That's a good call.
What I mean, like I tweeted about it, and I need to say two things can be true at the same time. Taunting is a terrible call, and it's obnoxious and annoying, and players should be allowed to taunt. But if you're ever going to call taunting,
yes,
that was like he hit every single like point of emphasis in the rule book. Say Flowers hit. I respect that he got his full value for taunting in that play.
The Ravens fans I was sitting next to were very opposed to the referees before the game started, and then they had that holding call against Likely early on that was. Touchy, I would say, was a bad call, and they were up in arms. Then there was a series of good calls that the refs made against the Ravens that the fans hated. Like, the Van Noy one was kind of, like, ticky-tack. You don't have to call it, but he did it. The other one where you slap, I mean, he just bumped him. Like, it wasn't.
He headbutted him.
He did headbutt him. You were in the game.
It felt like just a chest bump. Felt like just a chest bump.
He's a dand a little bit.
Okay. Good call then. And then there's like the slap to the face of Mahomes. These are all good calls. And I'm sitting there listening to people. These refs are cheating. It was really terrible and unfortunate. I also heard people. Oh, it's a good story for you.
Oh, yeah. I really like this one.
This is happening.
Here we go.
This is early in the game. Well, not early in the game, but in the first half, after a few bad drives the row by the Ravens. It's quiet in the stands, and a guy who's like a row behind me, like five chairs down, stands up. Lamar, you suck. And three rows in front of me, two black guys stand up and turn around and look at him. He sits down. He's a white guy. He sits down very quietly, and everyone else reduced their Lamar criticism. But once we got to the end of the game, everybody's like, oh, Lamar, just throw the ball. That was the funniest part where everyone's just yelling at him to throw the ball. Hurry up. This is not helpful, guys. Hurry up. What do you want him to do?
Throw the ball.
I mean, it's very clear what they wanted him to do. I don't think there's any skepticism there. This was a game where, like, this is the Brock Purdy game from last week. Whatever your priors were heading into this game, you got it. If you believe that the referees wanted to call a game that was going to get Taylor Swift into the Super Bowl, you could probably latch on to three or four calls and be like, yep, those are calls that were prevailing to the Chiefs. The Chiefs had a touchdown taken back on a total nonsense holding call. Yeah. Just like the worst calls in this game. Several of them went against the Chiefs, but it doesn't matter in the big picture. No one remembers those calls.
At home, I mean, in the Ravens stadium, no one seemed to mind that call. And my guy who said, Lamar, you suck, in the third quarter, I do remember, he was like, give him some time. He started yelling at the O-line instead. My guy, appreciate it. He evolved.
He learned. There's not going to be anyone standing up to defend the O-line in this section. There's not going to be some O-line truthers backing me up here. You know, it really felt like without the run, which they sort of arbitrarily decided they were going to get away from, it didn't feel like they had a thing they could rely upon. The RPOs weren't really there in this game. It felt like this was just a game where Lamar had to make Lamar magic happen. And he did on that early touchdown pass, but it was too few and far between. And so moving the ball maybe is the wrong way to put it, but they had opportunities to score. And they did not make the most of those opportunities.
He threw a ball to himself.
I was about to say, when you're talking Lamar Magic, that was the coolest play.
And he almost got it.
What did that dude say about that?
Yeah, I don't know. The stadium was erupting at that
point. He was like, I knew he was a wide receiver all along.
Flacco! Bring back Flacco! So I rolled out a new nickname, Steve Bagnola. How you like that? Because he was in his bag all game. You like it? I'll let you use it. Write it. Put it in your piece coming out tomorrow. You can write that down. Scribble it. All right. Steve Bagnola. He was in his bag. Nola.
So, as I get us back on track, -3 turnover differential for the Ravens.
Yep.
Lamar was sort of inconsistent, but the defense was probably the best unit out of any of the four units we saw on the field, whether it was the Chiefs offense, Chiefs defense, Ravens offense, Ravens defense. I thought the Ravens defense were, I mean, like the Chiefs had about 60 yards in the second half before that crazy MVS pass. They really kept them in that game. But I want to know, like, big picture, they lost to the Chiefs in a game where the Chiefs punted five consecutive times in the second half with Patrick Mahomes. And there's been a lot of talk about, like, the playoff medal of this Ravens team. Like, Lamar slayed the dragon of being bad in the playoffs last week. He came in. How do you sort of grade this playoff run in totality when you're looking at are you gonna be like, oh, they lost to a Patrick Mahomes team like everyone does, or this is a massive wasted opportunity when they were the most talented team in the NFL and they lost a winnable game?
It's both, right? Like they
nuance.
They had, you know me.
I'm not nuanced.
Go nuance.
You want something with your chest?
They had an opportunity to win this game. It wasn't like they were outplayed dramatically by the Chiefs. It felt like all year I was saying, I don't think I was the only person saying, the Ravens' worst enemy is not their opponents. The Ravens' worst enemy are the Ravens. And that's what happened here. They were sloppy with the football. They fumbled the ball into the end zone. They committed taunting penalties, personal fouls after plays, roughing the passer calls. They were headbutting dudes. you know, like, they dropped a bunch of passes. Aguilar dropped that first conversion early. I think Flowers had a drop. You know, like they, and then Lamar threw the interception, which was
two red zone turnovers.
And like, if you're a truly transcendent team, maybe you get lucky and overcome that. Maybe in a different scenario, the Ravens get something to go their way and they overcome that. But that's been their formula for losing all year. Like, they lost to the Colts, they lost to the Steelers, they lost to the Browns in games where they were sloppy with the football, where they turned the ball over a bunch, where they were dropping passes. And this felt like that again. And so I'm not sitting here saying there's something innate about the Ravens that prevents them from winning in the postseason. I'm saying they are the sort of team where they get in their own way, and they very clearly got in their own way again, just like they did in the regular season.
Yeah, I think that's a very reasonable take. I think it's a tremendously blown opportunity.
Reasonable.
Yeah, it's too reasonable for me. Like, this is...
Is this Lamar's best chance at winning a Super Bowl?
It's really hard for me to imagine them having a home championship game with a team that's fairly healthy and is as talented as their team was this year go up against a team like the Chiefs that is as flawed as they were offensively, with tackles that are questionable and no true number one receiver that scares anybody and an aging tight end. Like, I
look pretty nice today, though.
Yeah,
no, I get it. That was the one weapon they had, and it felt like... Yeah, I can't imagine. It doesn't mean that they can't win. They obviously can win when they're underdogs, but I can't imagine that they'll have all of this stuff line up for them again. We got Burrow coming back and Allen coming back, and the Chargers are going to get better, and Mahomes' team's going to get better.
Stroud.
Yeah, C.J. Stroud's going to continue to get better, and that team's going to get better.
Flacco.
Joe Flacco's going to lead the Browns into
Zach
the
Wilson.
Future. It doesn't mean that it's not going to work out for them eventually, but I can't foresee them having an opportunity as good as this one come back around.
Can we talk about the ref?
Yeah, we can talk
Please.
About the ref.
This
sure.
poor guy, just his voice started breaking like a prepubescent teenager in the second quarter. And I just felt like every single time there was a flag on the field, he's just like, oh no, please let's pick it up. Please, can someone else do this announcement for me? I don't want to talk. He's like announcing like taunting penalties, and like his voice is cracking. It just... I don't really feel bad for the refs very often, and I felt so bad for this ref in this situation.
He was fine. He handled it. He's a tough guy.
Charlie.
I thought it was funny. Yeah. I didn't feel bad
Thank
for
you,
him.
Charlie.
I was like, this is good stuff.
It was very different, obviously, having gone to the Houston game and then this game. Houston couldn't get out of their own way as far as like the crowd noise, and I guess you should be accustomed to it with the Chiefs, because every time you go to anybody's stadium, it kind of feels like a Super Bowl for that team, and it's a very intense atmosphere. And so I guess I shouldn't be surprised that they didn't have any like substitution errors, procedural penalties. And it goes back to the point that you were making, Bill, about teams beating themselves, like the Ravens have done many times this year. The Chiefs don't seem to do that in the playoffs, and it seemed like it happened last week too for them. Even though they had that fumble in the situation with McColl in the red zone, they just always feel like they're a team that's not gonna quite put themselves in those awful situations.
Well, we should talk about the Chiefs too, the big picture of how this team has succeeded, because I don't know if anyone on this podcast, maybe the person talking, wrote them off for dead because they didn't have any wide receivers, and they just continue to
Yeah.
And they continue to win.
Before some of them picked us, the Chiefs, to make it to the Super Bowl before the season. Some of us went 6-for-6 in their AFC bracket on ESPN.com and picked all six playoff games.
I wasn't invited to participate. Who knows what I would have picked? Here's the thing. Do you want to talk about the small picture accomplishment of winning this game for the Chiefs when they seem considerably undermanned, or the big picture of the fact that Mahomes is entering, this is crazy, a new stratosphere for what Mahomes is. Like, winning this way, you see people online talking about, like, this is dynasty era. This is Patriots, Chiefs, that's it stuff.
I mean, Cowboys, 49ers. But, yeah, they are in that position. I think the big picture is more interesting to me. And I think what this, I guess combining small picture and big picture, what this season means to the big picture of Mahomes is incredible. It's a team that no one thought had the ability. And this is the first time where we hear the name Jordan thrown around. When you got this guy, you got a chance. Obviously, the defense was great, but it does feel like the ability that Patrick Mahomes has does make this team. It's hard to verbalize this in a way that doesn't sound cliche, but, like, he's so special, and he gives them a chance just because he's out there. And we say that about a lot of people, but it's never been more true. I feel like I want to go back and take it away from anyone I've ever said it about before, because of the way that Patrick Mahomes has played, not just this year, but last year, with two teams that I didn't think were Super Bowl caliber teams. He's gotten them both to the Super Bowl, and I think I would probably pick him to win this one.
Mm-hmm. I think more than the numbers, more than what we see from him on the field on a week-to-week basis, more than the range of ways he's now found to beat people, like the fact that he's gone from being the dude who is going to beat you over the head with deep bombs to, like, the dude who's going to just pick you apart underneath, mm-hmm. who's going to scramble away from every sack, who's going to pick up, like, back-breaking first downs with his legs at the absolute most opportune time for the Chiefs, who's going to avoid making mistakes. Like, it really hit me today in how the announcers were talking about Lamar, where it was like, oh, if Lamar beats Patrick Mahomes, he's made it. Like, it is settled. He is good. And it's like, Lamar is about to win his second MVP in, like, his sixth NFL season. And even before today, I think if you asked 100 people, you know, you have to win a game, you could pick Lamar or Patrick Mahomes. No disrespect to Lamar. I think 90 of those 100 people, 95 100. Are picking Patrick Mahomes. 100 are picking Patrick Mahomes. And I think that's true for every quarterback. I don't know. I mean, like, yeah, to me, it feels like Mahomes is now on his own tier. And, like, we talk about Burrow, we talk about Allen, we talk about Herbert, we talk about Dak, we talk about all these quarterbacks who are great in their own ways, but there is nobody.
Yeah, you didn't have to include Dak to make Dominique feel good.
Oh, you know.
You didn't have to.
I wanted to get a little straight here we go out of Dominique.
Here we go.
But this is maybe a sad, like, a here we go.
Yeah, like in that Packers game, he was giving us a lot of
here we go. You know, I just feel like Patrick Mahomes is one of one. And it feels like he has become the standard to such an extent that you have to beat him in a meaningful game, I guess a playoff game, to even be considered close to Mahomes. And that's not going away. Like, that's only going to keep growing because his resume, his list of, like, playoff lore continues to grow.
It's I think when LeBron came into the NBA, he was immediately put on the, like, we're going to measure you on all-time great status, because he had so much hype and he started out so well. I can't really think of anyone else who came into a league, not since, like, I mean, I guess you could go back and I wasn't alive or paying attention when Magic was in the league, or Kareem, or anyone like that. But Shaq wasn't even like that. We didn't do that for Shaq. But anyway,
Big Magic Johnson, what's he ever done?
You weren't alive when Magic was in the league?
No, like, when he entered the league. The point I'm making the point that I'm getting to is that Patrick Mahomes is already at this fighting with ghosts stage, and he's been there for a couple of seasons where comparing him to anybody else seems irrelevant. And you said, I think we would pick Patrick Mahomes over Lamar Jackson. 98% of people would. And then you go to the rest of the league, I think it's still there. You go all time, game for your life, one quarterback.
I got Iguodala.
Iguodala. All right, it's time to move on. It's time to move on. Great. Shout out to Max.
Yeah, and his little dog.
Shout out Max Kellerman. Oh, yeah, we met him and his little dog. We ran into him one of our gallivants. Yeah,
West Village. Oh, wow.
Shout out, Max. We miss you.
Old stomping grounds.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur. Barnstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Swimsuit. Check. Sunscreen. Check. Phone charger. Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or in a carry-on. And the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
All right, let's talk about the second game. 49ers Lions. The Lions had some giveaways. I think you could say they went for it a couple times on fourth down, so kicking field goals. They were up 24-7 at one point. They had a ball bounce off a defensive back's face mask, which was caught by Brandon Ayuk. Then there was the Gibbs fumble immediately after, which like pretty much tied up the game. Then Reynolds had a couple drops. Jameson Williams dropped a touchdown. The punt where they forgot about the goal line and ran into the end zone. Anthony Firkser is not an Ambi Turner. And so I got to ask, does it feel like the Lions, does it feel like they choked against the 49ers?
So you think that Firkser can turn well over his left shoulder? He just can't turn over his right shoulder?
He can't turn right. He's not an Ambi Turner.
He's not an Ambi Turner.
Is that a Charlie Kravitz original phrase?
No, it's from Zoolander.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. I thought it was Charlie Kravitz original. All right, so you tainted the jury while asking the question. You went down a list
all admissible information
of all the evidence of them choking this game away. The one thing I push back on is the fourth down, going for it on fourth down, you missed them. They weren't bad decisions. I'll defend those decisions. I like those decisions. And those are decisions that got them past last week. Those decisions that got them to this point all season. And those are the decisions that Dan Campbell's always made. So I would subtract those out. The getting hit in the face with the ball, the fumbling, after that, the Reynolds drops, the Jameson Williams drop, like those. Did you include that in your rundown? Those are choke jobs, and I am sorry. I am sorry to be the bearer of bad news, but I think that on their plane ride home, they are having a lot of regret about blowing that 24-7 lead.
I'll grant the drops as choke jobs. I don't believe there's any sort of intent or relevance to the ball bouncing off your face mask and falling directly into Brandon Ayuk's hands. That's the one, because I feel like that was the biggest play of all of these, right? Maybe the Gibbs fumble might be the one, but like that was the one where it really sprung the Niners comeback, and total luck in every single possible way. And it's going to be held up as like, well, if Dan Campbell had just kicked that field goal, Kendall Vindor doesn't have the ball bounce off his face mask, bro. Like it just, it's just like, come on.
We need to collect everybody's dumb guy voice. Because Bill's got a great dumb guy voice.
You guys are going to start impersonating
me. He's got a great dumb guy. That's a great dumb football guy voice. Yeah, you're a nicer man than me. You can't have it bounce off your face mask. Like, you can drop an interception, but you better drop that thing to the ground.
You never got hit in the face with a football in your career?
No.
Never?
No.
Not even once?
I've dropped plenty of interceptions. No, but I've never
had... Not with your head, though.
I've never had one ricochet off my face mask in a championship game for a 40-yard gain. Like, no, hell no. And I'm sorry, but that stinks. And they threw a flag on it, which I didn't think was a good call, but it didn't matter because he headbutted it up. Yeah.
It was hilarious.
You get called for headbutting the football.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the story of this game, we can talk about it all we want. It's going to be Dan Campbell blew it by going for it on 2 fourth downs. And that's not surprisingly, I don't think that's the case.
Right.
But I want to ask a question because I think this is a thing I've seen a lot of online in the conversation about this play afterwards. There's been arguments that Dan Campbell and the Lions mismanaged this game because of the situation, and because it's a conference championship game, because they were up by 14 and they could have gone up by 3 scores in the third quarter, that they should have been more conservative than they would have been in a tie game in week 4. And I want to know, do you think that's the case? Do you think they should have been more conservative because of the situation they found themselves in?
I mean, it's obvious they should have kicked the field goal when they didn't get it. We can all go back in time. Yes, they should have been more conservative if they knew they weren't going to get the fourth down. But yeah, I didn't have a problem with them making a decision. So it feels dishonest to go back now and say I have a problem with it because they didn't make it. You could argue, like we always do, and say, well, we didn't like the play call. Like, none of that seems to really
matter. You got open.
Yeah, none of that seems to really matter to me. Yeah, the play call, the second fourth down, they were anticipating man and got zone, and you could not have an argument against that play call. But I didn't hate that play call either. Like, I thought it was the right decision. I personally would have kicked it, but I'm a coward. So I also probably wouldn't have my team in the conference championship. It seems absurd to all of a sudden or to have people celebrating Dan Campbell's aggressiveness all season as recently as last week to now. And that aggressiveness, the same way they got that lead, to now be like, oh no, now you got to be conservative because this game, it just feels cherry picky and cowardly, honestly.
I'll flip it. Do you think they should have gone for it at the end of the first
half? Yes, that's what I was about to say.
Points on the field by kicking there.
Yes, they were running it down their throat, and Kyle Shanahan was puckering up. He was shriveling. He was going he was giving us the full Kyle Shanahan. They couldn't stop the run. Chase Young had quit already like 4 times on goal line runs. Been like, nah, you're good. Just run it at that guy and you're going to score.
Fair point. Wasn't aggressive enough. I like that.
Yeah. That's the thing that I always find so frustrating with coaches, right? Where they're like, oh, you know, listen, the flow of the game. We were, you know, it's a close game. It was a defensive battle. They were beating their for 3 quarters of this game. They were doing whatever they wanted on offense. The whole menu was working. Like, Ben Johnson was getting raises in his text messages from the two teams left who have to hire coaches with each passing series. And the idea that, oh, they should have been conservative, like, they were dominating on offense for this game. If the numbers say these were close calls, the fact that they were so good on offense for the majority of this game, given how often we hear that teams should be more conservative than normal because of a defensive game or a situation that justifies, you know, being more conservative than numbers, this was a situation where you should be more aggressive than the numbers because of how good they were on offense throughout the first 3 quarters of this game until they started melting down and dropping passes and fumbling.
Well, it was good for Washington. Now you get a sober Ben Johnson here 2 weeks earlier to come fix the Washington. The one thing that I did complain about at the time in Ben Johnson's play calling was the flea flicker. As soon as I saw, him toss it back, I was like, "No! What are you doing?" They just like ran for 8 yards a pop two times in a row, and he's doing flea flickers. But yeah, I don't even remember how that drive ended. But I hated that. That pissed me off.
Didn't they have two flea flickers in this game?
I don't remember. I remember one that really upset me. That's the only one I remember in the second half. Like, what are you doing? Don't get cute. You're not the cute team. Like, you run tricks when you can't move the ball. You run tricks when things aren't working. Why are we doing tricks? You're running it right through this defense. But, yeah, that was it. That was why they lost the game, because Ben wanted to flick fleas rather than tote pills.
Should we talk about Brock Purdy?
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
Gamer.
MVP.
Clutch.
Clutch. You see the way that he threw the proper spin to make it bounce off of a face mask?
Don't forget the fact that that guy's deceptively athletic.
Oh,
did you see that 3 yard pass he threw against his body that required like a one-handed leaping catch from Juwan Jennings?
Third and Juwan?
I loved it, because immediately after he like threw a hospital ball that Juwan jumped up and grabbed one-handed, and then he was like, "Oh, I didn't get you hurt that play. Let me throw a hospital ball two plays later to you at the goal line." He was like, "Man, I don't know what Juwan did to him, but for a stretch there, Brock was not trying to win the game. He was just trying to send Juwan to the Amma Lambs."
He was like, "I cannot let Kyle Shanahan put him in the Debo role again. If Debo gets hurt, we cannot give Juwan Jennings more carries. I have to take care of this right now."
Debo's always hurt. I got to get Juwan Jennings always hurt too.
Debo, what a mess. Watching him with the ball in his hands, it reminds me a lot of like a skilled center in basketball where like you can't do anything about it. Everyone knows we're going to get him the ball quickly, and then he's going to break your tackle. And you come up with all intentions of tackling him. There was one play where a DB was on his ankle, and he lifted him up with his foot.
It was the face mask guy.
Yeah. Oh, rough day for face mask guy.
Yeah, face mask guy got Bulgarian split squatted 3 yards down the field.
Debo's such a special player. We got off of the Purdy love too quickly, though. Like, all jokes aside, Purdy, he made some big plays in the second half, mostly with his legs that were deceptive.
Yeah. Bill, what did you think? Because it looked like he was going to like go full pumpkin Purdy in the first half of that game, and they were going to be done.
Pee.
But then, again, like he was pretty good in the second half.
That's Brock Purdy.
Yeah.
Like, there's this idea in people's head of what Brock Purdy is, where he's like the stable, you know, game manager. He's going to get the ball out to the right guy. That ain't Brock Purdy, for better or worse, especially if Brock Purdy is trailing, because Brock Purdy's trailing, that ball's coming out. I don't know who it's going to. Brock doesn't always know who it's going to. He's going to scramble. He might run with it. He might toss it up against his body to nobody. Like he's like a cat who has learned how to play football. Like, you think you understand what Brock Purdy's gonna do, and then you might get that most of the time, but once in a while he's gonna mix it up on you, and you are gonna be more confused than you've ever been confused about a quarterback in your life, because he contains so many multitudes.
He's Brock Purdy.
A weird range of skills.
Oh my gosh. Oh, I'm sorry, Bill. I'm sorry. I got distracted. Nah. You said Brock Purdy was a cat. So Charlie said,
"Brock Purdy."
I'm sorry. I apologize to everyone listening. I double apologize to everyone watching. I apologize to Bill Barnwell.
No, I don't apologize. I apologize. I had to say
to Charlie's family.
Do you think the First Take producers were happy or sad that Brock Purdy won that game?
Thrilled.
Thrilled?
Thrilled.
You don't think they wanted to have, like, bring someone on to, like, Purdy's a bum. I always knew he was a bum.
Because he gave them enough bum for them to hold on to, and he can still talk about it for two more weeks. It's not as much fun to talk about the Lions. First Take is not a show that thrives on the heartwarming story. The heartwarming story was a one-day First Take thing. They're going to need, they got Purdy for 2 weeks. Oh, People going to pick apart how everyone else around him did it and he didn't do it. He just ran with the ball, even though he was pretty good.
Okay. Leaving the Lions aside briefly.
Okay.
Charlie, what did you say about Chase Young earlier in this segment?
Run the ball right at him because he completely quit on that play that Jahmyr Gibbs scored a touchdown on. He's not that
Chase
good.
Chase Young has not been good for a while.
That's
year.
Right.
Nick Bosa had 2 years. Sacks in this game, but they were the Lions did a really good job of taking him out of plays and taking advantage of their aggressiveness. Do you believe the Niners defense is something that should scare Patrick Mahomes and company, or do you feel like this is a worse version of the defense the Chiefs played in the Super Bowl 3 years ago?
I mean, I think it's obvious. It's the absolute worst version of that defense. It's probably the worst version of the 49ers defense in these recent Shanahan runs. One of the things that we've been preaching on this podcast is how those Shanahan defense or those Shanahan teams were always kind of kept in games by how good the defense have played. And that was the opposite in this game here. And they have several weaknesses in the Chase Young addition. I think bringing in Armstead, I think, is valuable, but the Chase Young addition hasn't bolstered this defense. And yeah, they're a do what we do type of defense because they've always been incredibly talented up front and had good linebackers. So they're like, all right, we're going to line up and do this, and we're going to be good enough that you're not going to be able to stop it. They're going to have to get, and they've already gotten a little bit more flexible and creative. I think after the bye, they started doing more man and more blitzing, and in this game, they blitzed a little more, and they're not built for that. So, yeah, it doesn't seem like that defense is going to pose a great deal of challenge for Patrick Mahomes, but the problem still is they still have a dearth of receiver talent.
Are we concerned? Are we officially concerned about the Niners kicker?
No.
No.
I don't get concerned about kickers.
No?
Yeah, no? Anytime being concerned about kickers.
Nah. Not in the Super Bowl? You don't get concerned about kickers?
Maybe. All right. Kick the ball. Got one job. I mean, yeah. What? Yeah.
You just don't care enough to be concerned. I understand. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it'll be all right. Whatever. I think it's going to come down. Not going to come down
to
a field goal. I can't wait
until
it comes down to a field goal.
We don't have to worry about this part.
I'm looking forward to the final play of the game being a 49ers field goal attempt to win the game after I said I don't care about kickers. Perfect. I do appreciate, though, that the 49ers won, so I don't look like a complete buffoon this weekend, because you like a buffoon because you said that the
You look like a buffoon.
No,
I do look like a buffoon.
Because you said the Chiefs were not a serious outfit.
I never said that.
Well, I mean, you essentially said that they can't make it to the Super Bowl.
Not what I said.
Okay, fine. Never mind.
The Lions were up 17 points. A team you called an unserious outfit for 4 months.
That's what I was saying.
We're up 17
that's
points.
That's what I was getting to. Except Charlie got sensitive because I jokingly called him a buffoon.
No,
was the buffoon in this case, and I was thanking the 49ers for saving me because obviously the Lions are good enough to be in the Super Bowl and are a very serious outfit after I said they were unserious. So thank you, 49ers. Thank you, Lions, for being an unserious outfit and blowing the game. Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo!
They were so unserious in the second half.
They were very unserious today.
Like, I mean, that guy, the face mask guy, not serious.
The punt upset me the most. And I know people don't care about this very much, but when they couldn't down the ball inside the one, it upset me because, you know what? The goal line don't move. It ain't never moved. And my guy seemed surprised by it. And I was like, what are you doing? Anyway, sorry, Detroit.
That'll be fine.
What's better for, so back on this first take thing. I guess they're gonna get a lot of runway out of Lamar and Mahomes tomorrow.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Lamar's in trouble, guys.
Do you think Lamar was watching the first half of that 49ers game being like, Brock, if you just keep sucking, no one is gonna remember what I did. Like all the analysts are gonna be so delighted that they were finally right about Brock Purdy, they'll forget about me.
No way. Lamar's too big a celebrity. Once his game was poor. And he knew he was in trouble. There was nothing that could save him.
Analysts love Brock Purdy. I don't know what you're talking about. Like, only the people who are too hardcore, too nerdy dislike Brock Purdy, right?
Nope.
No.
Who doesn't like Brock Purdy?
Well, I think most people like Brock Purdy. I think the interesting or the challenging thing about talking about Brock Purdy, which I think we've done a decent job of it lately, is, I mean, not just our show, but other shows have done a better job of it lately, is Brock Purdy inevitably gets compared to people like Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes. And that's when other people are like, hey,
the MVP debate,
he's good, but he ain't them. And so when if you say it that way, it doesn't get taken as badly as when the way they frame it oftentimes is he's being carried, which is also not fair. So I think that's the challenging thing.
He did literally get carried.
He did.
That was awesome. Did you notice that, Bill?
I think it was Feliciano.
Yeah. He, on one of his big runs, when he like the Lions seemed afraid to like hit him and get a personal foul, he sort of, you know, dove forward near the goal line. And Feliciano literally picked him up like a little baby Bjorn and carried him back to the huddle and like patted the top of his head. He's like, thanks, Brock.
A baby Bjork?
What's a baby Bjork?
A baby Bjork? you know, Brock Purdy hasn't changed. He does different things each week, but he's still the same dude. Like, I don't see why. But like at this point, I think if you have a belief that Brock Purdy is the single driving force behind the 49ers, or you have a belief that Brock Purdy is like a total useless quarterback who's entirely carried by the people around him and Kyle Shanahan, you're not paying attention. You're arguing in bad faith at this point.
Yeah, I don't think and maybe this is not the conversation you want to have, Charlie, but I don't think that anyone is saying either. I think that people are hearing both being said, whether anyone says it or not.
Yeah.
Is if you are on one side, like, no, Brock is good. He's helping this team a lot. Other people hear that as he's just as important to this offense as Lamar Jackson. If you say that Brock is not as good as Lamar Jackson, people are hearing you say that Brock is being carried by Debo and Christian and everyone around him. And so, I mean, it's what happens in debates about just about anything. So I'm glad we don't do that on this show.
Yeah.
Say it with your chest.
One more Lions thing.
Okay.
Do you guys see the shots from the crowd of people at Ford Field?
Yeah.
They didn't show them, to my knowledge, after the Lions blew that lead.
We need that footage.
Is it worse?
Burned it already.
To go to a stadium and where your team is playing on the road and have them lose? Or is it worse to go to a draft party where your team trades away its first draft pick and you don't actually draft anybody?
Well, I can speak from experience of both of these. So, really? I had a party at my house when I was getting drafted, and it's very uncomfortable. Luckily, I got drafted towards the end of the first day. It was back when first three rounds were in the first day. It would have been real sad saying bye to people as they were leaving because I didn't get drafted. That was pretty sad, but it turned out to be fine. It was pretty dramatic and fun. But I was in Miami this summer for the NBA Finals. Well, I wasn't there for the NBA Finals. I was there hosting Dan's show for Dan, and they had a watch-along in the hotel I stayed at was across the street from the arena, so I went to the watch-along, and I stayed for a half because Jokic was doing his thing. It got sat in there quick.
You're just acting like a Heat fan leaving early.
Yeah. I came late and left early because they had no answer for them. It was really sad.
We're not going to have a show next week, I assume, next Sunday. Or we're not the same kind of show, right? Are we going to do we have to do our predictions now?
No. We can do a prediction now. We'll save it. We'll do a show next Sunday. It just won't be... I mean, maybe we can recap.
Yeah, we can change
else.
Our predictions. Immediate or armchair predictions. Here we go. What you got?
And here we go.
What's the difference between a prediction and an armchair prediction?
Well, I feel like this is like the most heavily recency biased prediction you can possibly have. Like, we're not going to put any time, thought, and analysis and doing the matchup comparison. It's like right now I'm still high on Patrick Mahomes, so I'm not picking him against anybody. I am picking him against everyone, including the 85 Bears or the
they're old.
Yeah, he definitely would beat the 85 Bears. But yeah, I'm going Mahomes. I'm going Mahomes over everybody right now because I am still high on the Patrick drug.
I picked the Niners to beat the Chiefs in that Super Bowl a few years ago, and oops, I felt real smart for three quarters. And then in the fourth quarter, I felt like the biggest dum-dum. And I said, I'm not picking against Patrick Mahomes in a game like this again. So I'm going to be taking Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs one way or another.
Charlie is three.
Oh, yeah, I'm taking the Chiefs. Yeah. Are you kidding?
We're doomed.
Are you kidding?
We are doomed.
It's nothing to do. It's half Patrick Mahomes. It's also half Kyle Shanahan.
Brock Purdy is going to throw the ball off of Andy Reid for a first down somehow.
Off of his frozen mustache.
Off his mustache.
Well, this has been fun. Thanks for everything, Bill, all season long, since you don't want to come next Sunday. I guess this is the last time we're seeing you, so appreciate you for the Sundays that you've offered up until this point, and hope to see you in Vegas.
There's no game next Sunday.
It doesn't matter. I was still going to be here. I still wanted to talk to you. Still wanted to talk to Charlie, but clearly you're not going to be here.
You want. All right, well. I may not answer. I don't know what we're going to have to talk about, but you could see. You could probably talk about it.
Yeah, let's make predictions for the Pro Bowl dodgeball game. All right, we will see you in Vegas in a couple of weeks. Can't wait for that to happen. Going to be a lot of gallivanting. We'll be in February then. I don't have to do dry January anymore. Pissy all over the strip with my man Charlie.
I'm a little nervous about this.
Bye, Bill. Bye, Charlie. Bye, everyone. Thank you, Charlie. Thank you, Cortez. Thank you, Megan, Serafina, Brian, Kevin, and Podville. We love you.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.